Welcome to Mastering the Attention Economy podcast. I'm your host, Ari Lewis. Human attention is a scarce resource that millions of companies across the globe are fighting for. Once a week, I interview entrepreneurs, executives, and industry leaders on how they earn attention for their brands using social, content, and media. To learn more about my work, visit arilewis.com and subscribe to my twice-a-week newsletter on how to earn attention for your brand. Today's guest is Mikey Sadowski. Mikey leads global PR and communications at Intrepid Travel, a purpose-driven tour operator recognized as the world's largest adventure travel company and Travel B Corporation.
Thanks, Ari. Thanks for having me.
So, Mikey, you know, we know each other through Twitter. You're a head of PR at a huge travel agency in Canada, and obviously, they're global across the world. I think you have a really interesting story that I want to kick off with, where you didn't start in PR, and you sort of hustled your way. You worked at a hotel, and were like, "Hey, Intrepid, hire me as an unpaid intern." You know, let's start there of like how you got into PR and sort of this really interesting story about how you started off as an unpaid intern and now you're head of PR at one of the largest travel agencies in the world.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, I started as a concierge at a 5-star hotel in Toronto. It was in 2012, 2011. It was the only 5-star hotel at the time. Think kind of like, you know, Grand Budapest Hotel type vibes, you know. Met a lot of like celebrities, was making like $1,000 tips, driving fancy cars, kind of living this life as in early 20s. But like, you know, in the back of my head, always kind of knew that I really had like kind of no purpose in my work. And, you know, I toyed with this idea of being like a hotelier someday and all these things. But in 2012, I actually went on a trip with Intrepid Travel, just kind of on my own accord. I went to Peru and I absolutely loved it. You know, we were, you know, staying in local accommodations, eating like kind of the street food, going to all these amazing like places and Machu Picchu, et cetera, and just kind of fell in love with that style of travel and was very much kind of missioned aligned personally versus kind of like the luxury, lavish lifestyle in terms of travel. So, you know, I came back to Toronto and Intrepid is headquartered in Melbourne, Australia, but they have an office here in Toronto. And they had a job, marketing coordinator Canada, kind of like the lowest entry level job. And I went in there and I was like, "Hey, just went on this trip to Peru, loved it, would love to work here. Here's my resume." And then I didn't get the job. And I was like, you know, a naive young 20-year-old, and called them back. And I was like, "Hey, like, I have a degree. I applied for this job. Why didn't I get the job?" And they were like, "Oh, well, you don't have any marketing experience." And I was like, "Oh, like, turns out, you know, an important thing for a marketing job." So I was like, "Okay, let me get some marketing experience. How would I intern for the marketing coordinator?" So I was kind of like, the coordinator who was there to help, I would help the helper kind of thing. And so I did that. I got the internship January 2013. And 3 months after that, it turned out it didn't really work for the marketing coordinator. And I'd kind of been interviewing for 3 months effectively. So I was able to get the job as marketing coordinator Canada in April 2013. So kind of started there, my first kind of foray into kind of travel and marketing. And kind of, I guess, shortly after that in 2014, we still had like landlines in our marketing team, and the landline kind of rang, and I was the only one in the office at the time, and I picked it up, and it was like this guy who said, "Hello, my name's Ian Urbina. I'm a staff reporter for the New York Times Washington Bureau." And I was like, "Wow, like, I'm not really sure what that means, but it sounds very important." So I kind of just was chatting with this guy, and he was like, "I'm going to, you know, do research and do this big story in the South China Sea. Was hoping to help with some of the travel arrangements and stuff like that." And I was like, "I'm not really sure we can help you with this. You know, we're an adventure tour operator. We run tours all over the world." But kind of this idea, which came from kind of the concierge, just never say no without a solution. So I was kind of just like, "Yeah, we'll help you out." And so he literally called me when he got to Thailand. We went back and forth for probably about 5 months. And then finally, he ended up just going on a tour with Intrepid Travel and penned an almost 2,000-word print feature in the New York Times about an Intrepid Travel trip in Borneo. And I didn't really know how big of a deal that was in kind of the realm of PR and that kind of being, you know, a holy grail kind of target in publication. And essentially from there, I got a call from the founder of Intrepid and they were kind of like, "Hey, do you want to be the PR guy now? Can you just like do that again?" kind of thing. So that was like my remit, was like, do that again. So in 2015, I took the realm of PR in North America. We were kind of going like 60 stories a year. We kind of quickly ramped that up with an agency and a team. We got to 60 stories a month. We landed the New York Times another 25 times over the next 2 years. We started working on massive stories that went into, you know, broadcasts on the Today Show, National Geographic, everything in between. And essentially just had the opportunity to use PR as a massive pillar of our growth in North America, and kind of has all led up to the role that I have today, which is GM of global PR and communications for Intrepid Travel all over the world.
So, you know, you worked in a more general marketing role before getting into PR, and, you know, in a bit of a almost lucky way. But can you talk about, you know, the benefits of being more broadly exposed to marketing and how that helped you in your PR and communication career? What was, you know, some of the work, even if it was low level intern stuff, like what were you doing and how did that, you know, sort of shape your experience now? I assume you have a lot more respect for, you know, maybe some of the work that your colleagues are doing on the paid side or on the own side.
No, for sure. I think, you know, for me, it was just getting that real like holistic understanding of all the levers that we have to pull. You know, when we think about kind of our marketing in terms of the full big picture, we kind of have, you know, four channels: our owned, earned, shared, and paid, right? And kind of the exposure to all four of those things really helped understand, like, first of all, like how they all work in concert, which I think is critical. And then the idea of, like, you know, really being able to understand from a full view customer acquisition, like where PR can play and how it can be a more effective, like, strategic function of the business. And I think that was a really big thing for PR, because it's really, you know, we are lucky that our business very much buys into PR, but it's also the ability to kind of understand what function this plays. So, you know, when I was kind of working on more of the paid side, I was, you know, marketing director for North America, really starting to understand that. You know, we can send as many kind of paid ads as we want. We can tell people but, you know, when people resonated best was when it was PR stories, when it was stories from other people, that kind of like third party validation. And then starting to understand that deeper strategic function around, you know, domain authority and SEO and the value that our link building was providing and things like that. So, you know, for everything, I think when I was in PR originally, it was just kind of, you know, very much like tunnel vision. Like, this is what I need to kind of focus on and everything. And then when you start broadening it, you start understanding that PR and communications is actually a function of the entire customer journey and finding ways to actually improve our PR by thinking a lot more strategically and critically about it.
Yeah. So, you know, when you work with your colleagues, like, you know, I think about paid media, for example, it's really easy to measure the ROI. So, you know, your first thing was New York Times, and obviously you didn't know the impact. And obviously there's an impact to that, but how do you all measure that in-house of, okay, you're up to 60 stories a month. Like, yes, I assume one of your KPIs is media mentions, but, you know, how do you break it down from there? Do you have like different tiers of tier one mentions, tier two mentions? And then how does that translate into, you know, you're reporting to the CEO, hey, we had a story in the New York Times. I'm sure his first question is, okay, that sounds great, but how did we make money from this?
Yeah, so it's tough. And I think it's like the thing that will forever be asked of kind of in the PR thing. And again, the saying before, like, your business kind of has to believe in it or not. But, you know, for us, it's really like, we've tried to really simplify how we're kind of, you know, metrics around PR. And I think, you know, simple, but significant. And it's something that we kind of say a lot, but there's only really like two really important things. So one is share of voice. That's a big kind of metric of success for us. So, you know, it's great that you have 60 stories a year, but if your competitors have 150 stories a year, that's, you know, it doesn't really matter. So for us, we kind of benchmark from a few of like our top titles, and we always look at how many stories we're having published versus them, just to give us a health check of where we sit in terms of the consumer mind and the industry mind in terms of how much of the conversation we're owning. The big thing then beyond that is also sentiment. So it kind of leans into the quality quantity discussion a little bit. But, you know, if you have 60 stories and all of them are saying how bad you are as a company, it's not exactly driving any inherent value into the business. So we kind of are making sure that the type of sentiment is driving and aligned with our business. So whether it's leading with our brand purpose or leading with our product, making sure that it's not only the volume, but it's the right story. And then obviously the quality metrics. So the way we kind of baseline this is, you know, for at least online and digital stories, domain authority. So these are obviously sites that have, you know, rank very well and have kind of inherent authority for Intrepid to have links on. And they, you know, for example, New York Times, you know, 95 domain authority, CNN 100 or 95, whatever it is, compared to like, you know, this random travel blog that has a 20 authority. So we make sure that we're looking at not only quantity, but quantity of 80 plus domain. And between kind of those three things, I would say they're kind of key metrics. The thing for us, and we, you know, not to labor on about it, but we kind of go into our distribution of PR as well. So, you know, I remember a couple of years ago, we got in the New York Times 52 places, this trip to Nepal. We packaged it up into an email, sent it to our whole database. And within 2 days, we had sold 30 trips to Nepal, you know, at an average of $2,000 a trip kind of thing. Like, there's those tangible type things, But the idea is like, you know, show the share of voice, show the sentiment, positive sentiment, more stories than kind of your competitors, quality stories that are actually driving meaningful SEO results. And then every one of those, you have those unicorn that are actually really, really driving direct conversion as well.
Yeah, so that was interesting how you, you know, you've mentioned, and obviously you guys are doing like National Geographic now and in the Today Show. How do you manage these relationships, right? So, you know, one of the things that we talk about, you know, both with our clients, but also like as we're now moving more into an operator role is, you know, we use like our newsletters. We try to get a bunch of reporters on it. And then like, they'll ping us from time to time. Hey, I serve this piece. You know, are you guys using like social and content and trying to get reporters on it? So you're staying top of mind, but also are you doing like, you know, someone like the New York Times guy, just pinging him every quarter, like, hey, I'm in New York. You want to grab a coffee? Or like, hey, here's an idea. You know, how do you sort of maintain those relationships? And then I assume, you know, then you have these other, like these small industry vertical magazines where you're like, is this even worth the relationship? Or just let them reach out from time to time. So how are you managing that and working with your other teams to make sure that you stay top of mind for these media folks?
Yeah, I mean, I think you have to certainly exercise a certain level of humility, and it really kind of comes down to where you're, you know, your brand maturation and where you're at. Like, you know, certainly when I was starting on NPR, every relationship was the most important thing. And you know, still to this day, the same can ring true. But you do get to a point where there is a point of diminishing return where you have, you know, 50, 100 contacts. And instead of actually like really servicing a couple of really key contacts well, you're kind of half-assing like, you know, hundreds of people. So I think there is kind of a level of discipline that you have to exercise in terms of keeping a very kind of strong network, making sure that you're really kind of, you know, listening and anticipating their needs. But the big thing, and it kind of comes back to that foundation of customer service in terms of like how critical kind of that whole idea of like relationship building is in customer service. Like for me, when I was like really in the trenches of PR, like I would know everything from like their favorite, you know, Italian dish to the architect that designed their house, you know, like you actually have to genuinely care and learn things. And then when you have your conversation with them, you say, oh, it's not, hey, here's what I need from you. It's, oh, hey, how's this? How's whatever? You know, it's that mutual and shared value thing that is really important. I also think for us, like, and these are kind of comes back to like qualities of a good PR, which all comes into the kind of, you know, the relationship point of view is like, you know, you really have to think about, you know, a journalist or an editor as kind of a customer and trying to deliver superior customer service. So any good, you know, 5-star, you know, customer service kind of delivers on two things. One, you anticipate needs. And one, you always try and over deliver whenever possible. So, you know, we have our kind of networks and we know their verticals. We know what they write about. And if things are happening in the world, we get them information before they even necessarily ask for it or need it, just so that they have on hand, because that's them. You want them to keep kind of coming back to you. And then the idea of over delivering when like, oh, hey, I just need a kind of a quote. Like, hey, well, here's a quote. Here's some statistics if you need it. Here's a few images if you need as well. And it's kind of those, like the little things we say on our team. The little things are the big things. And we always try to make sure that we're over delivering into kind of those journalist relationships. But I think there is a point in time where we just kind of have to, you know, be very real with it and not try to be everything to everyone. We keep a very, very kind of close network. But at a base level, we, you know, never take for granted anyone who wants to write and publish stories about Intrepid. And we try to keep very, very deeply human relationships whenever possible.
Yeah, so that's two follow-on questions specific to that. So first is, how do you identify who is the point of contact, you know? At what point do you like, you know, I assume it's New York Times, you know, the CEO is probably coming in, but if it's, you know, John Smith, the one person, you know, industry pub for travel, you know, I don't know if the CEO is necessarily speaking. Do you have, you know, as the PR person, do you have people you identify and give them media training so that, okay, you're the go-to person for this story? And then at what point is it like, you know, it's you maybe doing the quote. How do you decide and allocate that? So that's my first question. Then after you answer that, I'll have my second question.
For sure. So yeah, you know, we try to keep it. It's very important to kind of have that kind of streamline and have those expectations. Like the worst thing you can kind of do is have open season, 20 people can speak about anything. So we have essentially we have like our three kind of core source markets: North America, EMEA, and APAC, which is kind of, you know, done out of our head offices in Toronto and New York, London and Melbourne. So in each of those regions, we have a PR manager. The PR manager works directly with the regional director, so the head of the region. And all the head of the regions are the ones who have media training, and the PR managers are the one facilitating all the kind of local media interviews and all those things. So we kind of have those three base level spokespeople. Then we obviously have our escalation. So the, you know, the executive team. So for bigger stories, bigger features, broadcasts, you know, bigger publications, our CEO, James Thornton. And then we have a few kind of like specialist verticals. So Intrepid has been a carbon neutral travel company for the past 10 years. We're the world's largest travel B corporation, very much a mission driven business. So we have an environmental impact specialist named Dr. Susanna Eddy, who is very much our voice on climate action and climate change and things like that. So we will have kind of a few specialists that work within the business for very specific stories. But at a very base level, we try and keep it kind of in those four key spokespeople around our regional directors and then our CEO.
So, you know, I guess to follow on that, do you have like specific, you know, we talk about relationships and then, you know, the CEO also talking with different folks. A, you know, is the CEO doing some of this like media relationship building or is it just you? And then on top of that, you know, are there specific media organizations you work with like that you just, you know, if you have exclusives, right? Let's say you're publishing, you know, top 20 adventure places to do a report, you know, are you always giving it to, you know, the New York Times? Are you varying that? You know, how do you manage those exclusives and also like the other media folks inside, you know, how are they working with reporters on that stuff?
Yeah. I mean, James certainly as our CEO would certainly have relationships with a lot of kind of journalists as well. Some people go directly to them. He'll usually be pretty good at handing it off, mostly just for like consistency and continuity, you know, making sure that our message is aligned. I think is one of our biggest challenges that we, you know, kind of have like, you know, pre-pandemic type thing. Like we'd have, you know, thousands of employees globally, you know, stories in the hundreds and hundreds in all of our kind of main markets. So making sure that, you know, what we're telling journalists in North America isn't drastically different from Europe or Australia. And I think that's one of our challenges. So we just really make sure that we're kind of very aligned in our messaging. In terms of kind of the whole thing around exclusives and things like that, I would say it really comes down to the relationship. It certainly does help relationships, but at the same time, it can hinder it. So we have to be very careful around offering one publication because what you're effectively saying is, you know, you have a higher kind of clout and authority in our mind and whatever. So it's usually a little bit more behind the scenes, but absolutely. And I think the big thing is really if it's a fit for the story. Like we always talk about this idea of like, are you adding value to the conversation? So we're not just going to like do offering exclusives and things like that just for the sake of doing it. But if we really feel like it's a really, really good story for the right journalist who's really passionate about telling it, we absolutely will go and say, hey, just FYI, this is coming out in a couple of weeks. We'd love to kind of get it on your radar first. But I think that's the big thing is making sure that when you're approaching those conversations, it's about shared value because the whole thing is not necessarily us being like, hey, we really want to be on CNN, so we're going to give CNN first. It's more so, hey, we know you write about this. We know this really works for your publication, so we're going to give it to you here. And that's how I think you really build effective and meaningful relationships, really built around shared value.
So one of the things you talked about was messaging and narrative building and making sure it's aligned. You know, when you came into, you know, your new role now, was that you going, okay, we need to, you know, make sure that messaging is aligned? Was it already aligned? And is there sort of, you know, I know some companies, they'll publish, you know, externally facing, here's our mission, our messaging, you know, are you all doing that? Is it more an internal document? How are you going about building that? And you know, on top of that, how should companies think about that? Because I think one of the conversations I have with a lot of folks is, you know, sometimes you'll have the CEO manage a relationship and they're talking about whatever, and then you have the PR person or some other comms person talking about something else and it's not aligned. How do you make sure there's that buy-in on that internal messaging alignment and narrative?
Yeah, that and it's a big challenge that we kind of, you know, have dealt with historically, and I think we're getting a lot better at. I think, you know, one of the big things is just high touch communication. I think this is something that there's a lot of like, you know, a misinterpretation of like micromanagement versus high touch management. And I think the idea is like not to like hover over everyone and control them. We want to empower all of our PRs globally to, you know, be able to kind of run their media market and build their relationships, but also being able to just identify the non-negotiables and keeping that communication going. So, you know, we have weekly communications, the entire global team will actually have a monthly call where every single person, and it's always a terrible time zone for someone, but we do it because that high touch and alignment is really, really key. And how we take things like all as the GM of global PR, like, you know, put together the global release, the global messaging, global quotes, and then distill it down for everyone to kind of regionalize, add in stats or product or things like that, and then kind of share it. So what we'll usually do is we'll kind of, you know, where we used to kind of have a little bit of like, you know, four different types release or three different types release, we essentially what we're doing now is one release and everyone kind of adapts and regionalizes as needed. But it just helps to have like within a story there, here are your three non-negotiable points. And then here are your 3 points that you can regionalize and adjust accordingly. And that just helps us tell a very succinct brand story while still accounting for the regional differences, which are really key for garnering results in market.
So, you know, you talked about regional differences. How do you stay up to date on, you know, hey, I'm in Canada right now, right? That's where you're based. Okay. Something's happening in Asia. What does your team look like? You know, are you guys doing stand-ups every day? How do you communicate? How do you make sure that, you know, especially maybe it's something time critical or something's happening on social that you're up to date? You know, how do you know what's going on?
Yeah, I think a big thing for me was, you know, especially coming to this role, I kind of went up North American PR, then North American marketing director and things like that. So a lot of my exposure was very much in the market. I think it was really important to like kind of become obsessed with it, you know, stay locked to Twitter and LinkedIn and all these things. And then that was a challenge that I had to face. Like, hey, how do I like plug into those kind of markets more? So, you know, a lot of it is really just how adjusting your exposure to things. Like I started realizing my own personal bias of like, oh, I follow only journalists from North America. So really starting to expand my network there. Noticed that the things that I was reading daily were only from the North American lens. So started unsubscribing to North American newsletters, subscribing to European newsletters and APAC newsletters. So it was a lot of just, you know, making sure that I was plugging in and then also having conversations with, you know, marketers and journalists and editors. I think that's one of the big things that I've started to embrace a lot more. And I think it's just a critical thing for anyone is just kind of like having a lot of agendaless conversations and having chats. I think, especially in PR, that was the one thing I learned very, very quickly was this idea of like, you need to know people before you need to know them. This whole concept and notion that if you're only reaching out to people because you need a favor or you need something, like it's never going to be a positive relationship. And a lot of the things that I would be doing is like, hey, you kind of write for this publication, don't really have a story now, but we'd love to have a chat, learn about your verticals, know what you do. And then down the line, you know, if we do need something or you need anything, we've already established that relationship. So a lot of what I've been doing now is making the time to have chats with new people in Australia, new people in Europe. It exposes me to the market and it also helps to kind of better understand the intricacies in terms of the stories that people cover.
Yeah, so I think PR and communications is different than sometimes the other types of marketing where, you know, if you're in paid, you could literally just be on Google and doing ads and stuff. And when you're, you know, doing communications, you also have to have a bit of personal branding around you, right? Like it's not just about the company. And I think a lot of, you know, folks forget this. So like, you know, you're on podcasts, you were a member of the Forbes Communication Council. You know, how have you thought about building your personal brand? How has that helped you, you know, in your communication role? And like, what should, you know, maybe people listening to this, or if they're thinking about building their communication personal brand, you know, how should they be approaching it? And I know that was a lot, so happy to repeat some of those questions.
Totally fine. Like, I think, I mean, there's a few things. Like, I guess starting with the whole kind of like the personal brand or however you want to mix it up, I think the key thing is to understand like, you know, the function of PR. Like you were speaking briefly there about kind of like paid and all that stuff. Like, you know, the most exciting and impactful thing about PR is this idea that, you know, paid advertising is you saying you're good, where earned media is other people saying you're good and other people that. And that's a really, really key distinction. And I think it's kind of the same thing when you're kind of like, you know, looking to kind of develop your personal brand. And I think even from a personal branding point of view, none of us are building our brands, but we're doing it to help elevate Intrepid Travel. And that's a really big thing as well. But it's this idea that like, you know, we can go out there and be putting all this like kind of thoughts out and things like that. But when you actually start doing it with other people, building community, learning people, hearing their ideas, you're kind of elevating the kind of the category and the community, but you're also kind of learning and doing it through other people as well. I think the biggest thing, which we've all kind of done, is just getting runs on the board. Like it sounds like very like simplistic and things to say, but everyone has to start somewhere. So, you know, you got to just start putting your thoughts out there. And I think people don't understand like that it's actually, everyone has a unique story to tell. And the most interesting thing that you can do is provide perspective on what things are happening. Like I love, you know, whenever we post a new campaign or do something like that, I always like to try and provide the context behind it, giving a little bit of the where and the why and the behind the kind of process that went into it, because that's the thing that isn't clear. And I think that's something that, you know, adds a lot of value. But this kind of idea that if you're starting out, it's being, okay, what is my company and what are things that I learned internally that other people wouldn't see? And then starting there. And then the big thing is that eventually, trying to make sure that you're sharing that in other people in new channels. So it's not just kind of you're going in the cycle of talking to the same people, but you're also putting yourself out there more into kind of new audiences as well.
Yeah. So as we begin to wrap up the conversation, my last question that I like to ask is, you know, you joined Intrepid in 2013 from unpaid intern to head of PR. So for everyone listening, you know, there's rags to riches stories everywhere. And you know, what is one thing that, you know, like big lesson that you've learned or one thing you maybe would do differently if you were, you know, joining the company today, knowing what you know now?
Yeah. I mean, I think if there was one kind of thing that would kind of be a non-negotiable and something that took a little bit longer for me was just getting a lot closer to our customers. Like just this idea of like being able to, you know, have conversations with our customers, doing more customer research, always kind of listening to their lens, because, you know, this idea that all of your stories and everything that you're doing is ultimately laddering up to the end user. And you make a lot of assumptions around, oh, I think people will like this. I think this is what people want to hear. And for me, I think that was a little bit of that naivety of like being like, oh, like, yeah, I know best. I'm, you know, going to do all these things. But the first thing is, if I would have found a way earlier to streamline that kind of interaction with customers, I think that would have really, really helped me in my career. And I think beyond that as well, just, you know, I came from a non-traditional background in terms of PR. So I never really knew what made a good PR person. And I honestly think that was an asset for me, because I wasn't kind of feeding into a specific playbook. And I was kind of just like doing things that turned to be a little bit different. But, you know, there's kind of three things that I've quickly kind of realized make really strong PR kind of people. And I think it's this idea that like you yourself have to be a journalist. You know, you create stories internally. You have to find effective business partnering. You're not only the gatekeeper of the story, but you're the seeker of the story. And you need to internally find that information. That idea of like customer, but like that customer service obsession, anticipating needs, over-delivering. You know, those basic tenets of customer service are key. The only thing that'll change your career are who the customers are. They could be hotel guests. They could be journalists. They could be web users. But those ideas, like if you're always trying to anticipate and over-deliver, like you'll generally find success. And then the critical component is just how much PR and communications is actually storytelling. You know, we talk a lot about this, you know, everything is a story and the best story wins. You kind of, you know, for us, we write our headline and we work back from there. We really start thinking critically about like, what is the actual story that we're trying to tell here? And if you can't really communicate your story effectively, succinctly, getting in a way that hooks people in and then has them care and then has a good resolution, like that was the whole thing. PR is not just like comms and exchange of information. It's really storytelling. And I think that's probably, you know, a long way of saying those are probably all the things that I really kind of learned. And in retrospect, is something that if I had kind of had mapped out a little bit more at the beginning, I think I could have gotten off to an even stronger start.
Thanks again for joining us. For those who, you know, were watching or listening, you know, where can they find you on social media, or if they want to contact you? And I'll make sure also to post those links in the description as well.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. Always open to chat. Love kind of making, you know, connections and chatting more about PR, marketing, comm. So definitely a great place to find me on Twitter at Mikey Sadowski or over on LinkedIn at Mikey Sadowski as well. So definitely look forward to connecting and really appreciate the time and the chat, Ari.
Cool. Awesome. Well, have a good one.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, consider giving us 5 stars on iTunes. If you're listening to us on YouTube, consider hitting the like button and commenting on what you enjoyed. I'd really appreciate it.